Tuesday night edition of the Dunktown Basketball Podcast. This is going to be our last new episode of the week due to Thanksgiving, although I am actually planning on rerunning a classic. If you guys need a little bit of fare and you're a new listener who hasn't gotten to that one yet, if you have listened to that one before, sorry for the redundancy. In any event, interesting show today. We're going to talk about teams that really have holes in their rotations where they're just not getting the performance and maybe ways that they might try to upgrade that. Also go through and look at some players maybe who are playing well but aren't getting enough run so far in the league. And want to remind you too that we are sponsored by CESO, S-E-E-S-O, the new ad-free streaming service that brings you hilarious original series, handpicked classics, weeks of stand-up specials, and more. Find out more about them at CESO.com, and you can get up to 2 free months free with that promo code CAPSPACE. And then NatureBox. Start snacking healthy with NatureBox. NatureBox.com/CAPSPACE will get you 50% off your first order. So we're going to debut a new feature here that I want to see kind of how it goes. Totally off the cuff, you and I each came up with 2 questions for each other beforehand. We did not share what they were, and we'll just see how we do. Hopefully your question for me isn't going to require a ton of research, and hopefully mine for you will be the same. But why don't you start us off here, Danny?
So my first question is kind of a big picture one. It's something that I've been thinking about a lot the last week or two, which is the bottom part of the Eastern Conference playoff picture so shaky right now that even teams that maybe could or should tank won't because they think they can make the playoffs?
Yeah. I would say I wouldn't put Miami in that category. I definitely, I would think in the sense that I think that they would tank. The Nets obviously can't tank. The Sixers, it's not going to be a question. They're on a 2-game winning streak, but they're going to fall out of it pretty soon. Although they do have some guys who are actually playing better than people think at this point. And I'm not sure who else necessarily is in that category. Maybe the Bucks, the Magic, like those teams are like pretty close to 500 right now. I mean, I think once you're getting 5-10 games behind, the Knicks would be another one too. Yeah, I mean, you might be right. There are going to be some of these teams that are going to fall out, or like maybe they kind of stay in it and they have like a really crappy point differential. The Pacers might be one of those teams too. I mean, the fact that they're somehow 7-8 with where their fundamentals are right now is pretty remarkable. So yeah, I think we will probably see some teams that way. But then I think overall in the whole league, there aren't that many teams that are going to fall into that category. I mean, Suns now 4-11, Mavericks 2-11, Wolves, Kings, Nuggets. Like those teams are going to be good enough that they'll probably be hanging around in that same tier as the East teams. I think we're not going to see much in the way of that until like after the trade deadline. Maybe that's where finally some teams will have that line of demarcation where some teams are willing to be realistic. Others are going to like keep chasing the dragon. And kind of in the way that the Wizards did last year.
That where you got to at the end of that is what I think is going to be true. But also you have this pressure with the teams that I was primarily thinking of were Orlando and Washington that, you know, Washington can get there. I think they have enough talent. Orlando, you know, we'll talk about them.
Yeah, yeah. Later. Washington's fundamentals are a lot better than Orlando's, right. I think. And also Washington just has been good at some point recently.
Right. And so I think that it's going to shake out that, like, you know, teams like the Knicks, but also a lot of those teams have pressure beyond wanting to compete for the playoffs. You know, Orlando, Hennigan's fighting for his job to a point, you know, Washington, of course, Ernie Grunfeld is. And so we could see just that push of the team, let's say 4 or 5 teams that are competing for the 7 and 8 seeds, though I expect Detroit to eventually get past those guys. And that'll be kind of fun. But yeah, I think they're going to hold on. But in the West, I think it's a little bit stronger. And so those teams are eventually going to go, yeah, you know, we're not going to be able to make it there, especially if Minnesota comes on a little bit. Not that last night was that encouraging, because there are more good teams in the West than there are in the East.
Yeah, I think that's right. And to see out of Denver, Minnesota, the Kings, how those three teams are going to shake out. They all have similar records right now. You can make the argument that all three of them should be a little bit better than just like straight up tanking level of teams this year. How that shakes out. I mean, I think the Wolves will still end up being the best of that group, but we'll see. All right, here's my first one for you. Outside of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, which rookie will end up being the best player now that we have about a month under our belts?
It's a good question. I've liked a lot of what Brandon Ingram's done. I think Ingram, he's not going to be that, from what I've seen, that star guy, the end-all be-all, but I don't think there is another guy in this class that will fit that role, and he could end up being a very nice supporting player on a good team. You know how I like primary ball handlers, and I like rim-protecting bigs. There isn't really a guy in this class that I see as being a, you know, a real prototype in either of those those roles. So if Ingram can do some creation as a, you know, kind of as the secondary guy on that and then be a nice weak side shot blocker, that's a really nice role for him in the scope of the league. And in a class like this, that might be next best.
Yeah, and one of the things that I am looking at the rookie PER rankings right now, among, and you know, like Kuzminskis is number two, you know, we're not going to include someone like him, Willie Hernan Gomez. So, I mean, among the guys who are drafted near the top of the draft, Jaylen Brown has the highest PER at only 12.86. And when you consider that PER doesn't even include defense and some of the other floor game stuff that rookies are inherently just bad at anyway, you get an understanding of how bad rookies are. Last year's rookie class really spoiled us. This year's rookie class might actually be worse than average. But really, I mean, in any given rookie class, you probably have maybe like one, two, three players who are actually like positive NBA players to winning. I think with Braun, I've liked what I've seen from him, that he's been able to actually get on the floor, partially helped by injuries, but that he hasn't been incredibly inefficient. He's been more efficient in the NBA this year than he was at Cal, not turning the ball over too much. His usage obviously is a little bit lower. I'd like him to actually like hit the defensive glass every once in a while. Like he had that one unbelievable rebound against Cleveland, and then he just, that might have been like his only rebound of the season. He's been awful on the defensive glass. Wancho has been really impressive. I don't think he has the upside so far. And then, you know, you get to guys like McCaw. He's still, I think, could be good, but he's kind of a role player. And then Jamal Murray and Ingram. I mean, to me, based on what we've seen so far, and also just obviously your pre-draft expectations still comprise a large chunk of this, it's between Murray, Ingram, and Jaylen Brown to me so far to answer this question.
That's fair. I would add in Chris Dunn just if he figures it out, but I haven't seen enough from him offensively to say that he will be the centerpiece.
If he weren't 22, I would be feeling.
Because, yeah,
he was supposed to be ready. He was supposed to be, I mean, if not ready, at least provide competent backup point guard play, and that's not happening so far.
My number two would be Jamal Murray. I've really been impressed with his passing. He batted a lot of things. You know, his defense has still been shaky and his shot isn't where we expect it to be. But there is reason to believe that the positives we're seeing can continue and that some of the things that he's better at, you know, he was a great catch and shoot guy in college, will come back. And that really aligns with Brandon Ingram in terms of not being a star, but being a very useful player on a very good team. And that's something that separates him maybe from a guy like Wancho, who I really like, but is fundamentally more limited in terms of ceiling.
Yeah, and for Murray, he just started the year. I think he was like 0 for 14 to start the year. And since then, he actually has been looking pretty good. He's had like a couple of these games where he's gotten into the high teens now, shooting it better. I love the versatility of his jump shot. His passing has impressed at times. He's not doing anything on the boards at all, or, you know, still kind of struggling to contribute in the floor game very much. So that's going to be an issue. I mean, and then the other guy that I might throw into this conversation would be Dragan Bender.
Yay!
And his stats haven't been that great either. I mean, he's got an 8 PR himself, but they've played well with him on the floor. I think he's just shown just a little bit of knowing how to play. It's probably just small sample size and so far that, you know, he can actually be effective this year, but I don't want to totally foreclose on that yet. And I think the fact that he's managed to not be totally inefficient the way he was at times, I mean, any rookie with over a 500 true shooting percentage, that's like really good when you look at some of the stats for these guys. I think he can be kind of helpful. I'm not going to foreclose him from that conversation. And then, you know, Sabonis, again, he's been playing 22 minutes a game, but his stats aren't that great. I think you'll see with a lot of these guys, and we'll talk about too with the rotation spots that need to be upgraded, you see flashes from these guys. It's like, oh yeah, he looks pretty good. Like Andrew Harrison, for example, we've been talking about him being pretty good. And, you know, he's got an 8 PR right now. 46% true shooting. Like, you know, I mean, it's like, all right, you watch him. Yeah, it wasn't too bad in this game. But like, then you look at really the aggregate of his performance and it's like, this is not so good.
It's also the perils of, you know, as much as we watch, you can't watch every team and more specifically every player that often. And so you sometimes get biased based on the small amount that you saw. And especially if it confirms what you felt beforehand. Andrew Harrison's one like that. I liked him. I thought he was underrated in the draft process. He's done, you know, he's done all right. He's still, even at an 8 PER, just the role that he's carved out for himself is impressive considering his path, but it is still important to note that.
All right, what's your next one?
In their current construction, are the Orlando Magic salvageable as, let's say, being like even a low-end playoff team, or do they need more fundamental changes to be relevant?
So you're saying just like at some point in the future with the guys that they have, like without going through like what we would classify as another rebuild,
correct,
essentially is what you're thinking of there? Well, what would I do if I were running this team? Let me think about that. I would probably go with Aaron Gordon at the four, obviously. Probably roll with Ibaka and Biyombo as my fives. Maybe play Ibaka a little bit at the four. Go with a three-man, big-man rotation of Ibaka, Biyombo, and maybe Nick Vucevic play a little off the bench. He probably would complain about that, so I would just trade him away, even if it's just for nothing. I would try to see if I could get something out of Elfrid Payton playing with, you know, and try to just say our plan is we're just going to play to a scoreless tie here, get out and run a ton, see if I can get something out of Hezonja this year. I mean, it's looking like maybe he'll be a rotation player at best, and he's not even close to there yet. You've got Fournier. He's a solid two, you know, probably about a league average two, slightly above that if he continues to develop. Yeah, it's tough. That's probably 35. Maybe if it's all, it all, you're really, the question you're asking is how good can this defense be? If they could just get their best defense, because they're not scoring at all anyway now, right? So you might as well just, and Vucevic has been really inefficient. We'll talk about him more later too. You might as well just play as much defense as you can. And then, you know, if they're going to be the 12th best defense in the league, the answer is no, they're going to need another rebuild, I think. Because even if you look at what we think the best versions of Payton and Gordon can be, they're not primary creators, right? So, and they don't really have anyone who can do that. And they don't have enough shooting either. And they don't have even a ton of cap space now to go and get another player who can really help them. And people aren't going to want to go there. So I think it's about a 50-50 chance that they may still need like a whole nother rebuild. But I think if things work out poorly for them this year and they get a new management team in place, maybe those people will have a mandate to do that as well. But it could end up being required because they don't have anyone on this team. They did fix their ability to get someone who could protect the rim. And also, I guess there's also your concern that Serge Ibaka is just going to leave for nothing. That's an issue. It's not looking too good for these guys right now. It definitely is not.
And they have a couple of wins. We talked about this a little bit. I think it was on like Thursday or Friday about the idea of that they have a couple of wins that they're fortunate to have.
Yeah. You know? I mean, they're a 4-10 team right now that's masquerading as a 6-8 team.
And so you have a lot of things running together that I agree with you that trying out Biyombo, trying out Ibaka, just to see what you can do with those lineups, there is something that you want to, that you could potentially unlock. I don't think it's there, but it's possible. And we'll talk about this a little bit in the rotation issues because I've been looking into the Magic a fair amount, is that they just don't have enough offense. So yeah, the defense is the key to their ceiling, but even if you have a good defense, you have to be at least somewhat credible on offense. But getting into the idea of at least getting an identity as a transition running team, so when you get stops doing it, getting those cheapy buckets, that might be enough to just give them a few games, especially if they're out competing everyone, and maybe that's their path. But even that, I don't think is enough to get to relevance.
Yeah, and unless Elfrid Payton somehow turns into Mike Conley, and remember, it took Mike Conley like 5-6 years to turn into Mike Conley, there's no way that this team, even if the players who are on it right now can evolve into being what we might conceive of their best scenario, how is this team any better than 20th in offense? I really just don't. They don't shoot threes and they don't get to the foul line, and there's no spacing for to be able to attack the rim. So if your ceiling, even if at your best version of yourself, is 20th in offense, you're probably going to need another rebuild at some point when you're relying on a team being a top five defense. It's just to even like make the playoffs, that's pretty rough. All right, here's my next one. Who is the best player on the Golden State Warriors right now?
Are we talking in terms of playoff ceiling, or are we talking just how they're playing at the moment?
However you want to define the best player. I think about, maybe you could think about it as like, all right, what is your projection for them for who will play the best and be the best player in this regular season and playoffs?
Kevin Durant, for the reason being that while Steph Curry, you know, we have to see if he can get back that isolation single player offense that was such a key to his success. It's funny because I just wrote about how he's done a great job of incorporating the at the rim stuff. He's shooting more inside 3 feet than he has before, and he's making just as high a percentage as last year. But the other component of it, but the reason is because Durant's defensive ceiling is so much higher. We were there in Oklahoma City for games 3 and 4 of that conference finals when he was just dominant. And as great as Curry is, and I think the idea of Durant and James as these dominant defenders overrates them as regular season players. If we're incorporating the playoffs, then that has to be a part of it.
I think you're right there. Also, I would say that Steph still has the higher ceiling just because of what he did last year, and that his stuff off the dribble is going to improve. But I think Durant both on a game-to-game basis and just when you look at his potential outcome over the season. He's just so consistent. His efficiency has been incredible. He actually has a lower usage rate than Steph, which might surprise some people. So, yeah, I think if I had to predict who is likely to have the best season, I would probably say Durant at this point, especially in part of the because of the defensive stuff that you mentioned. Also, I think that teams are going to really go to switching against them a lot, and that's going to mean that KD going one-on-one, and they're going to have to do more of that, especially in the playoffs. So I think that'll be important, especially if Steph can't show that type of one-on-one verve that he had through most of last year before he got hurt. But Steph definitely could be Steph if he just starts going crazy the way he did. And then, you know, one of them, I also think Steph's more likely to get injured or just be bothered by nagging injuries. That's another reason why I probably would go with Durant at this point.
Yeah, that's something that is important to consider just because the history of it. And, you know, he gets Curry just with the way he plays, just gets those kinds of things. You know, he had that against the, you know, the Siakam play, no one's fault, just bang knees. And, you know, Durant shook off the one with Jabari, which was a little bit jarring because you don't see him go down that often. But, you know, it feels like he's more durable in that sense, even though he's had that foot stuff. I don't know if that's past him or anything, but it just feels different.
All right, we're going to move on to looking at some of those teams that really need to upgrade in the rotation. But first, this from CISO, spelled SEESO. A new ad-free streaming service bringing you hilarious original series, handpicked classics, and weeks of stand-up specials. I love old SNL. The super fans, I talked about them last time. The other one that I really, really have been wanting to watch and have been watching with CISO is Sprockets. I actually went as Dieter from Sprockets. We have some younger listeners who probably won't remember, but it's basically Mike Myers as this hilarious East German nihilist who dressed in all black turtleneck and pants. In any event, oh yeah, and so at one point he had a guest on who was the star of the hit German comedy Who Are You to Accuse Me, which I just makes me laugh just saying it. Anyway, even if Sprockets isn't your thing, there definitely will be something that's your thing on CISO. Great British comedies, the next big names in comedy, the icons before they made it big, like Louis C.K., Hannibal Buress, Chelsea Peretti. It's just the best place to go for comedy. It's ad-free and just $3.99 a month. Right now, my listeners can try CISO free for 2 months. Use that cap space code. Easy to remember. We talk about it all the time on the program. So go to CISO.com for 2 months free with promo code CAPSPACE. Also, let them know that you came from us. CISO.com, SEESO.com, promo code CAPSPACE. All right, now I wanted to get into some of these teams that really have spots in the rotation that are not working out. And it was a good impetus to do this because we saw with Houston how much of a difference it can make when you take one bad guy out of the rotation and replace him with not even like some superstar, but just like a competent NBA player.
So there are a lot of different places that you can go with this, but one that I think we've both thought about a fair amount is you could say it's Utah's power forwards, because Lyles hasn't been all the way there yet and Boris Diaw has absolutely struggled so far this year.
He's only played 6 games, but in that he has a negative 2.61 PER, that is worst in the league, 29% true shooting, turning it over on 23.6% of his possessions, which is top 5 worst in the league. And he's only using 11.2% of possession. So a big part of why he's been turning it over, he has not been willing to shoot. I always thought that a huge part of why he was so successful in San Antonio when they moved into the starting lineup in that 2014 finals was he actually was a good three-point shooter and shooting 40% from three. He was aggressive now, having lost some more athleticism. He's coming back from this leg contusion that he missed a few games with. It really has been ugly, but they don't have a ton in terms of other options because, as you said, Lyles is a little bit not ready there yet defensively. I mean, I think on a good team, which the Jazz are trying to be, he's more of a 10-minute a game guy, 15-minute a game guy. Make sure you spot him in the right matchups.
Their best path, because you don't want to play like Jeff Wizzy and Rudy Gobert together, might be to give more minutes to smaller guys at the four, doing it in bit pieces. Joe Johnson and Gordon Hayward we've talked about before as being potential fits, because the Jazz are a rare team that has enough wing talent even without Alec Burks to make this work.
Yeah, they've got Joe Ingles who has played well, and then I think when you go to those lineups you need to have Gobert in there to take care of the rim protection and the boards, and when you go with Withy, that's maybe when you go with Lyles as well. Though, I mean, Lyles, to be honest, he's not really any better at protecting the rim or on defense. And if they just played small, he's probably a little bit better defensive rebounder, but not a ton. But of course, I mean, what they really need is just for Derek Favors to come back. He's going to be out indefinitely now with this bone bruise on his left knee. So another one that really is the most egregious offender on this team is Kyle Singler. 0.10 PER, 35% true shooting. Again, really low usage and really low efficiency, which is just about the kiss of death, because they don't respect you when you don't have the ball. And then when you do, you can't do anything with it, even on their those rare times. And it's just, I don't understand what happened to him. Like, do you have any idea what it is? Like, he was a competent NBA player, and from the moment he set foot in Oklahoma City, like, maybe this is just like some protest against fracking or something. Like, he just has not been able to get going at all.
He was legitimately good. I mean, when they made the trade for him, when he was on the Pistons, when he was involved in that deal, I think we both liked it. The contract he signed was a little bit weird, more of a duration issue than a cost issue.
But I thought that was a good contract. Sure. In the summer of 2015, he had been even as just as a lower level rotation guy. If he could have just done what he'd done in Detroit, that actually would have been a value contract.
And so, yeah, and he just fell off a table. I mean, so his true shooting percentage every year with Detroit was in kind of the 50% range, you know, so 51, 1 year was a lot better than that. Oklahoma City last year, so his first full year on the team, 48, this year, 35.
And he's still, though, because they have no other options, he's played 13 minutes a game in 9 games. And I don't really know where they go from here, because really, nobody on this team who is a 3 or a 4 has been a passable rotation player if you look at their statistics in the aggregate. I mean, at this point, like, they should even be trying Josh Huestis, because he really can't be any worse than Singler was. At least he can defend, which Singler is not that good at. Maybe you just hope that he hits enough shots somehow. I mean, they're very familiar with him. He played all last year in the D-League. His D-League stats were very unimpressive, but at least give him a shot, because there are just an incredible number of guys on this team who have not performed in the slightest when you look at their backup smalls.
I've been beating the drum at various moments for Anthony Morrow, but he's been bad this year, and he's below 10 PER, 42% true shooting, and those should get better. You know, those are aberrations if you look at his historical norms, especially as a great catch and shoot guy, but it's not like he's earning that time, and he's, I believe, 31.
His terrible defense isn't an aberration.
No. And that's going to get worse now he's 31, you know, post, you know, long post physical prime. But that ties in with, you talked about the issue of their depth at the 3 and the 4, and that's certainly there. But just the sheer amount of guys that are in their rotation that haven't been particularly good this year, despite the resources and the fact that they don't have cap space moving forward, is concerning to say the least.
So Robertson at least is a good defender. He is under a 10 PER. Sabonis has had some moments. He shot well on threes, and then he declined these last few games, 3 out of 15 over his last few games from three. That's gone down. KP, actually, when he was in town for that Thunder Warriors game, and I saw Sabonis shooting around before the game, he looked pretty competent. He had been shooting well on threes up to that point, and he was going to bet me whether he would finish the year at over 35% on threes. I'm glad that I did not make that bet. Based on his college history, I wasn't quite comfortable. So, and KP would know, since he's up in Washington where Sabonis went to school. So there, he has looked good at times, has shown some flashes, but, you know, still under 10 PER, not some great defender. So, you know, he's your starting power forward. Alex Abrines, shooting specialist. They've tried to go to him. They've tried to go to Morrow to get some additional shooting. We talked in the 15 and 60 how they have just nobody who can come off a screen or shoot when spotting up. Abrines, good shooter, but still probably not ready yet from the NBA three-point line. It's going to take him a year to adjust. You want to finish out the list here of like these sub 10 PR guys?
Singler, we already talked about. And then Samaje Kristen, who was not supposed to be their backup point guard. They were supposed to have, you know, Cameron Payne, but he's still on his way back. And they also paid Ronnie Price a bunch of money, and Kristen beat him out for that spot and has not been good.
Yeah, and Price, frankly, would be better than Kristen has been so far with his 6.2 PR, one of the lowest points per possession as a pick and roll ball handler so far. And actually, he now is dealing with a concussion, so it's just going to be Oladipo playing as the backup point guard for a while. But then that thins out your wings too, if you want to do that, and you have to have more of these other guys who are going to play. I mean, it really is remarkable. I mean, that's how you get to the 25th best offense. That's how you get to Russell Westbrook taking 8 straight shots with nobody else even hardly touching the ball down the end of that Lakers game. I mean, Westbrook has been unbelievable. Like, the fact that he's managed to be efficient with this flotsam around him has been pretty incredible, and they should be better offensively if they just had anybody who could make a shot.
Speaking of flotsam, Jason Smith.
So Smith, 1.04 PER. And what jumped out to me about his stat line is somehow he's turning the ball over on 32% of his possessions. I think that's like 6 or 7% worse than any other player in the league. He has 15 turnovers, more turnovers than field goals. He's 11 of 27 from the field. So I felt like, and this is not going to be good for you because it reminded me that you still owe me some film punishment from our Dwight Howard contract bet in which you said that Dwight would get paid over $100 million in his next contract. You're pretty close there. I looked at all of his turnovers. The first one that I queued up somehow began with like Paul Millsap shooting a three, and I didn't understand how it would be possible that like a Smith could turn it over on a play that started like that. So Millsap makes the three, and then Smith steps over the end line inbounding the ball for a turnover. There were plenty more rather inexplicable plays. They've got him doing more DHOs. There were two plays in a row where he just got ripped up by Mike Muscala, not exactly like Kawhi Leonard trying to do a DHO. Whenever he rolls to the rim, instead of popping, he has passes that go right through his hands. He tries to put the ball on the floor, he gets an offensive foul, or he loses the ball. He's had a couple of passes that have gone into the fourth row. He's throwing these passes. Like, they're not even, like, he's off by like, oh, he threw it inaccurately to the side. It's like to the side and like way over the guy's head too. It's just been absolutely remarkable. Jason Smith has usually been a pretty low turnover player because he just shoots the ball for a long two every time he touches it. He probably needs to get back to that. But the sad part for the Wizards is he's actually taken Andrew Nicholson's spot in the rotation.
Nicholson, who they gave 4 years to and a lot of money. And this all compounds with an issue that I actually wrote about for the Sporting News on Tuesday, which is that the Wizards had high aspirations for the summer. I'm not going to knock them for that at all, but they could have given John Wall, they could have renegotiated and extended him just like with Harden and with Westbrook. He has more years on his contract, but basically they could have given him about $16 million more total for those 3 years in exchange for a fourth year, assuming he was amenable. And so all it would have taken was a little bit over $5 million in space. They're paying Jason Smith $5 million to be their third string backup. He's terrible, and they haven't used their room mid-level exception, which they could have used to get a better center than Jason Smith for less years.
So the Cavaliers, Richard Jefferson and Mike Dunleavy, both struggling. They are shooting poorly on threes. Jefferson only 3 of 15 on above the break threes. And Jefferson wasn't really that good last year. I mean, he was sort of viewed as a space eater, minutes eater during the regular year. He was on a minimum contract for a reason. And then he had this incredible renaissance in the playoffs. Was awesome against Golden State, had these finishes where he just went back in a time machine to do these amazing double pumps at the rim. He was able to switch competently on defense. He didn't look good trying to guard DeMar DeRozan in that Raptors game that they ended up winning at home. And then Dunleavy is shooting very poorly as well so far, not giving as much in the other areas as he did before that back injury last year in Chicago. So one of those two guys is going to have to give them something, hopefully Jefferson for them, because I don't think Dunleavy is going to be able to hold up defensively against the good teams in the playoffs, especially the Warriors, who of course is the big monolith that they're trying to match up against. So they're going to need more out of Jefferson, even if they are getting more out of Iman Shumpert so far this year than they did last year.
The Shumpert point is a big deal because he can bring some versatility, and he's playing well at moments with LeBron, so that you can play the two of them when Kyrie rests. But one of my biggest misgivings about Cleveland's offseason was that they knew about Durant early on. They knew July 4th, and they didn't get any kind of high ceiling forwards that could be a possibility to really kind of fix that issue. And Jefferson, while he had that renaissance in the finals, likely is not that guy. Dunleavy is not that guy. They're more regular season helpers than in the finals. And so they are going to have to rely on that or use that big trade exception that they still have from the Anderson Varejao deal.
Yeah. I think, to be fair to Cleveland, I'm not sure who necessarily would have been available there. And I thought that they did well to get Dunleavy basically for nothing with that Dellavedova trade exception. But we'll see. I mean, I think they do need to add something if they're going to play against this Warriors team that's looking like it's pretty unstoppable on the offensive end. I think they just are going to need to get more athletes. And I don't think Jordan McRae really is that guy. He might help a team that needs some shot creation on the second unit, but that's not what these guys need. And McRae's defense has a long way to go. In Phoenix, Marquise Chris has about a 6 PER right now, and he's not the kind of guy who's going to make up for his bad box score stats by doing stuff in the floor game. And defensively, he's been really bad in the on-off metrics. I think they're at like a negative 16 net rating, and he's starting, which is fine. I think that, you know, they're going for development. This is a year where most teams are not tanking, and so they're now at 4-11. They're not going to make the playoffs. It's better for them to go for that top pick and try to develop guys, but maybe it'll be at some point Dragan Bender who's getting these rookie entitlement minutes instead of Chris. Bender got a DNP in the Suns' last game against Washington.
I liked what fellow Washington Husky Kevin Pelton brought up as a flaw for Chris of pattern recognition, and you can work on that in practice, though NBA teams don't practice a ton at this point in the regular season. In-game experience helps, but that doesn't mean that he should be getting that at the expense necessarily of somebody like Dragan Bender. Also, if you're going to go full bore into the abyss that is tanking, strategic emphasis, whatever you want to call it, I would like to see the two of them play together, play them at 4 and 5 and just see how it works.
Yeah, and I don't think Bender is going to be some panacea. He himself has a lower than 10 PER, but they have actually played very well with him on the floor, at least offensively. And I think at least he's maybe a better fit with starters because he's used to playing more of a low usage role. He's going to execute better than Chris is going to defensively. He's just a little bit smarter of a player, has more experience playing at high levels. He played for Maccabi last year, has played on the Croatian national team, and he'll space the floor maybe a little bit better than Chris will at this point in his career. Next guys, Pacers backup bigs. Their centers have really been bad. I was there in Indiana on Monday when they started Al Jefferson. They desperately needed some scoring. Tried to go to him in the post a few times, was not able to create anything. He looks like he's really like 30 or 40 pounds heavier than at his best, really, since he had that knee injury last year in Charlotte. So he hasn't been able to create offense. We know that his defense and rebounding is not exactly stellar either. And then, you know, Kevin Serafin, Lavoie Allen has like a 6 PER himself. He has not been able to have the on-off impact that he's had in previous years. Serafin is, you know, really a third center. And with Miles Turner, not a guy who is going to play a ton of minutes, both due to foul trouble and just kind of being young and potentially ineffective at times, this is a big problem for Indiana.
They also don't really have the right guys to go up tempo, even for short stints outside of their starters. Miles Turner can do that, but maybe if you played Lavoie Allen at the five, but they don't even really have another four unless you're going with a traditional swingman at that spot, maybe Glenn Robinson, maybe CJ Miles, as they did last year. And that would be something that could help unlock an offense, especially in the second unit that's been struggling.
Another one, Portland, either 29th and 30th, they've been bouncing around there in defense. When your team is bad on defense, usually the first place I look is the bigs. Their bigs have not been good this year, really, on either end. Mason Plumlee, a guy who's kind of doesn't really have the heft, not a great rim protector, not a great finisher at the rim either. I mean, for a guy like him to have a true shooting percentage that's basically the league average, that's really concerning. Like, he does distribute the ball pretty well, but I think teams are getting the memo from the playoffs last year that if they throw it to him on the pick and roll, trying to make him finish at the rim instead of leaving a shooter to go help on him is the way to go. He has been a really high assist percentage, but that's really about all you can say that he has done well so far this year. Hasn't gotten on the offensive glass. That was something the Blazers were awesome at last year. This year they're pretty middling. Ed Davis has not been good either. 9.1 PR for him, below 500 true shooting percentage, hasn't been blocking many shots either, not finishing around the rim. Myers Leonard, also another guy below 500 true shooting percentage, taking 60% of his shots as threes. 2.0 offensive rebound rate for this allegedly athletic 7-footer. He does nothing at all inside the arc, and he can't hold up defensively as a center either. So anytime you play him as a power forward, your defense is going to be awful. And Festus Ezeli hasn't played. They really have no good options there right now, and that's why we talked about them maybe as a potential suitor to get into the trade market for a big. But, you know, and Zach Lowe wrote a column about them today that I just read, saying, you know, maybe they could go for like a Vucevic or a Monroe, that Olshay likes those kind of post-up centers. That would be the worst kind of player they need. They need someone who can just defend and defend and defend and rebound, maybe get up for some alley-oops on the offensive end. Like, that's the kind of guy they need.
There is a rational basis for prioritizing or for caring about having a screener that can handle the ball in the case of traps, because teams are going to do that against Portland all the time. But if you are committing your center to that niche with their defensive backcourt, your team's just not going to be competitive on that end. And it is incredibly hard to be one of the best teams in the league if your defense is bottom half. And then you're putting a lot of onus on your second unit, a lot of onus on your creators to create reliable offense. And so we're seeing them have these weird games where they're either in a shootout with a team that isn't very good, like that Nets game, or getting beat by the Knicks last night at MSG.
Yeah, and their backup wings haven't been much better either. Turner, I think if you want to look at the reason why they've dropped from being in the top 10 in offense now, just not a ton, but some, I think that the lack of spacing that he's provided has been one. Zach was saying in his article that they've really had to change up the offense, which has been a beautiful offense so far, to accommodate Turner, to get him the ball in spaces where he can do something with it, because otherwise teams just aren't guarding him. All right, lightning round here. Andrew Harrison with Memphis has had some moments, again, of looking good, but that's true for a lot of these rookies, right? Like, they have some ones you watch them, you look good, and then you look at their stats and, like, you know, they're just below 10 PR. And I mean, again, PR is a flawed stat. We don't want to focus on that too much, but it is like a good catch-all. And basically, unless you are awesome at the rest of the floor game, if you have a below 10 PR, you are hurting your team. And there are very, very few rookies who are good in the floor game. And I would say that Harrison, you know, hasn't been terrible there, but he's not exactly like adding a lot to the ledger. Who else do we have just kind of quickly among position groups or players who have been underperforming?
New Orleans is dealing with a problem that, even though now they have Drew Holiday back and their guard rotation is getting better, they're playing a lot of guys at the three. Solomon Hill, Dante Cunningham, most notably, who are probably power forwards, but they just need minutes at small forward, and so they're running into an issue there.
Yeah, although at least those guys have been defending, which has been helpful. Hill, for all of his inefficiencies so far, inability to hit a three, not able to do anything off the dribble at the three when he's guarded by wings. Yeah, it's definitely been a defensive renaissance for New Orleans relative to where they've been over these last few years. Miami's wings and power forwards have been awful, especially with Justice Winslow out with this left wrist injury the last few games. They just really have nobody there who is even close to like competent NBA player. We're talking about Luke Babbitt. James Johnson maybe is the best of the bunch, but still a guy who should be giving you spot minutes at best. Derek Williams, Josh McRoberts now has to play backup center with Willie Reed out. That's another rotation slot that they've been struggling with Reed having that hyperextended knee. And then another contract that we pilloried in the offseason, not looking too good so far either.
Austin Rivers is an intriguing player because he does have defensive potential, even though it's overrated right now. But the Clippers deserve credit for having a lot of offensively talented players on their second unit. They're playing Felton, they're playing Crawford, and they're playing Rivers. So it's helpful, but it also creates this like completely unnecessary guy that's the coach's son who's making more than $10 million a year.
All right, let's get to the positive part, which, of course, we love to accentuate here on the program of players who we think maybe need a little bit more run. But first, this from NatureBox. NatureBox is a way to start snacking in a healthier manner. They make snacks that actually taste great and are better for you. They're created with high-quality ingredients, free from artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners, so you can feel great about snacking. My girlfriend went through their page, and that's probably the best thing to do, really, if you want to see what they're about. They just have over 100 snacks, some really unique, interesting stuff. She loved the mini Belgian waffles, for example. She loved the watermelon stars as well. And it's just a lot more interesting, tastier, and with less artificiality than what you'll find in the grocery store snack aisle. So you want to get started with them, naturebox.com/capspace is the way to get there, and also get 50% off your first order and let them know that you came from us. There also are new snacks every month, inspired by customer feedback. And if you try a snack you don't like, NatureBox will replace it for free. So naturebox.com/capspace, that's how you get started with them. naturebox.com/capspace, let them know that you came from us. So in contrast to the promise that I just made, we're actually going to transition into this by talking about another position that has not been very good, and that's Minnesota backup point guard. Chris Dunn has, other than one game in which they beat up the Memphis JV squad, has not played very well. Again, under 10 PER, can get into guys defensively, but still has a lot to learn in terms of execution. And just his shooting from outside has been horrible. And while, of course, they invested the number 5 pick in him, I think clearly Tyus Jones is a better player right now and should be getting those minutes if Minnesota is going to prioritize winning, which I understand if they're not, they want to develop Dunn. But I think Jones is clearly better and younger, by the way, right now.
Yeah, well, I think he'll be younger longer than right now. but the idea of Tyus Jones is something that is just acknowledged, that being a good NBA point guard takes some time. Running an offense, Jones has been around it a little bit longer. While it doesn't matter in the scope of things, he was the Summer League MVP this year, but he's shown a greater competence at that core responsibility, which is running the offense. While Dunn has struggled shooting, I personally would enjoy seeing him play a little bit off ball with Jones and just seeing if it works, because the shooting is a problem, but defensively Dunn can defend both positions, and so that could work. But having Jones out there will help their offense just function when Rubio's not on the floor.
Yeah, Jones has a 17.6 PR, 57% true shooting, taking 45% of his shots from downtown, getting to the line a ton. Also, he gets a ton of steals. Just generally a smart player. His floater game has looked good. I think the biggest thing that's been encouraging about him is going into Duke, he had a reputation somewhat as a non-shooter. He shot a very high percentage at Duke, but it was only about 2 attempts per game. And so you wondered how real that was. But he's always been an outstanding free throw shooter. And really, he's getting to the point now where he's very comfortable bombing away from downtown. I don't know if he's ever quite going to be a starter, but I think he can be a quality backup, play in some of those 2-point guard alignments off the bench, as you mentioned. And, you know, maybe he can be sort of like a rich man's DJ Augustin in time. And I think, you know, certainly can be better defensively than someone like Augustin with his intelligence and his quick hands. Who else we got here?
Do we need to talk more about Dragan Bender, or did we kind of nail that in the first segment?
I think we hit that there. I also wanted to talk a little bit about the Raptors backup wings, Terrence Ross and Norman Powell, both of them playing very well. You had noted that Powell at one point had the best offensive rating of any non-Clipper. I think that's come down a little bit, but he's been hitting his three-pointers. He isn't asked to get to the rim a lot, but he has actually a lot of explosiveness. I mean, he's not necessarily going to like make a second move and fake guys out and get to the rim, but if he could do a straight line pick and roll drive on the backside or drive a closeout, he can really explode. And then his defense has been outstanding. He's a little bit miscast trying to guard some of the power wings, but I think he can guard 1 through 3 as long as it's not, you know, a LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony type. And then Terrence Ross, waved off game winner in Sacramento aside, has still been shooting wonderfully from downtown. To my eyes, his defense hasn't been as egregiously bad as it's been in past years. So both of those guys really are, I think, I don't know that Toronto is going to want to move them, especially with Damari Carroll a perpetual health concern, but they're very competent. Again, for a lot of teams that don't have wings, Toronto has enough of them, and that's a reason for optimism.
Particularly with Jared Sullinger out, if there should be a place for Norman Powell and Terrence Ross in this rotation, maybe that is going to smaller lineups, trying Damari Carroll a little bit at the four, because it's not like they're trying to save some sort of great defense by staying big.
Yeah, that's a good point there, especially with Patterson continuing to struggle as well. But yeah, you would think that between DeRozan, Powell, Ross, one of those guys maybe a trade could be in the offing, because I think they're all quality rotation players at the very least. Although if Carroll is always a health risk, so maybe they feel like they're happy that they have that level of insurance. Another guy I think maybe doesn't necessarily need to play more during the regular season, but to me has clearly been the best big on the Warriors, has been David West. And they've been using JaVale McGee. They've been trying to mix in Kevon Looney down the second half of the first and third quarters. But I think especially in the playoffs, if you feel like you want to take Pachulia out, part of that will just be Green running at center too. But I think West has been better than Pachulia, and he's definitely been better than any of the third string centers so far.
West has found a comfort zone at that beginning of second, beginning of fourth range with Kevin Durant, with Sean Livingston, but that should in no way preclude them from trying him in other spots as well, or just experimenting in different places, because just because someone succeeds at one thing doesn't mean you want to keep them in that forever.
And I've also really been enjoying some of his deep post-ups. The Bucks, and this is starting to become a problem for me with Jason Kidd, that I think his rotations don't really make a ton of sense. He's really flying by the seat of his pants to a large degree. And with that being the case, you know, he's got this thing with the centers now. He said before that Warriors game that he was going to play two centers generally, but he didn't know which two it was going to be. He didn't want to play all three because it was too difficult for them to get into a rhythm. But John Henson was going to start, and then basically Greg Monroe has only played due to foul trouble these last two games. And that's ridiculous because he has been by far the best of those players, even if, you know, there's some weird things going on with the dynamic between he and the organization right now.
Monroe and Giannis probably shouldn't play much together, but you're not going to play Giannis 48 minutes, so why not use Monroe during that time?
I don't know. I still think he should just be the starting center. And because they're not getting anything from Plumlee and Henson. I mean, both those guys have just not been good enough to me. I mean, Monroe, while we know he's limited, he is the best net rating on the team, 4.7. Giannis at 3.1 is the second best. And I think they also really need some more scoring when Jabari is playing without Giannis. He hasn't quite been able to carry those units offensively. They're below 100 net or 100 offensive rating when it's just Jabari playing without Giannis. And so that is definitely a concern. And Greg Monroe, I think, could really help with that. He gets on the offensive glass. And I think also another reason to start him is because when other teams go small, then it's hard for him to play. And then, you know, there are going to be times where you just can't have him out there due to the matchups. Like, for example, I thought Kidd, the biggest reason the Bucks lost that game to the Warriors wasn't down the stretch, but because they gave up about 10 points in 2 minutes going with Greg Monroe at center against the death lineup, which was kind of foolish. Now, they're not going to face teams like that all the time, and you don't want to fall into the trap of making the Warriors a litmus test for whether something's a good strategy because they're so unique. But I mean, he's just been playing better than these guys. Fit issues aside, at some point, just having a better player trumps fit. Maybe not as often as some people would think, but I think this is one of those cases.
I'd like to see Toledovic play when it's Giannis and not Jabari, and Monroe makes a lot of sense when it's Jabari and not Giannis.
Yeah, and more of the Toledovic at center. I'd like to see that too.
Why not?
For the Knicks, Kyle O'Quinn has a 21 PR. He's been good. For some reason, there has not been, for example, O'Quinn was great in this game against Toronto on the road, and then Willy Hernan Gomez took his rotation spot again the next game. And Hernan Gomez has been okay, but he's still a rookie. I don't think he's like so much better defensively than O'Quinn is. And now with Noah again slated to miss some time, I'm sure he will again at some points during the regular season. I think O'Quinn, yeah, he's can be frustrating. He'll force some passes. He's not the most heady defender, but he actually provides some production as at center next to Porzingis. They can't play Porzingis at center all the time. They have some limited wings as well. So I think he should be playing. I think he's a better player than Hernan Gomez right now to me.
He brings a value that is distinct. I also like that he's comfortable shooting out a little bit. Just it's not necessarily the best thing in his game, but that he can do that. And he brings a level of competence that is nice. That's part of the reason why I liked him as a part of their big man rotation. And he got consumed by Noah. And then, of course, Porzingis is playing really well, but he should be in that mix outside of those two guys.
You have anyone else you wanted to point out? I think we're about done.
Yeah, there are two small things. One, I like what James Johnson has done for the Heat better than Babbitt and Derek Williams. They tried Babbitt as the starting four for a while. He added something. I get what Spo was going at with the idea because they have so little floor spacing. They've been using Derek Williams more recently. Johnson does a lot of what Derek Williams does, but just a little bit better, and I like him a lot better defensively. And then the other one is, as they're getting closer to full strength, Boston's running into this, you could call it a problem, where they have a really nice starting unit with Jay, with Al Horford, with Isaiah, with Avery Bradley, and then they're still figuring out the four, assuming it'll be Olynyk eventually. They should go more with a wing heavy second unit because they have enough shooting. They've been using Jarebko in that kind of a spot, but going a little bit more aggressively, playing Jalen at the four and whichever one of the other twos they wanted, like Gerald Green or something like that, can open things up a little bit. And it's more about mentality than anything else, just realizing those guys are way better than most teams they're facing and just should run opponents into the ground in transition.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see Jalen get some opportunities to just try to go one-on-one against the opposing fours. And while I think their rebounding is certainly suspect going small to four. Jarebko's not some great defensive rebounder, and they at least have Smart and they have Rozier, great rebounding guards that they usually play in that unit that can at least help make up for that just a little bit. All right, we done here? You got anything to plug?
The aforementioned John Wall Wizards piece is now up. Did the normal thing on Warriors Pacers, and then working on various things, but also getting excited because it seems like we're getting closer to an announcement of the next CBA, and of course that will lead to a bunch of stuff for both of us.
Yeah, much of which will take us just sitting hold up for like a week at a time to try and like suss out what all the differences are going to be.
Yeah.
All right, thanks so much for listening. Don't forget about our sponsors today. CISO, you can use that cap space code to get 2 months free for some incredible comedy that you can't get anywhere else. And then NatureBox, naturebox.com/capspace, 50% off your first order there. Follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Thanks everyone who's given us iTunes reviews or ratings. We appreciate that as a way of growing the show. And we will have a little bit, just a rerun of an old, hopefully evergreen episode over Thanksgiving for your traveling pleasure. And have a great Thanksgiving, since I won't talk to y'all until Sunday. Till then.